When the process of fruitive yajna became manifest within his heart, King Pururava went to the same spot where he had left Agnistali. There he saw that from the womb of a Shami tree, an Ashvata tree had grown. He then took a piece of wood from that tree and made it into two aranis. Desiring to go to the planet where Urvashi resided, he chanted mantras. Meditating upon the lower arani as Urvashi, the upper one as himself, and the piece of wood between them as his son. In this way, he began to ignite the fire. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Vedic fire for performing yajna was not ignited with ordinary matches or similar devices. Rather, the Vedic sacrificial fire was ignited by the aranis, or two sacred pieces of wood, which produce fire by friction with the third. Such a fire is necessary for the performance of yajna. If successful, a yajna will fulfill the desire of its performer. Thus, Pururava took advantage of the process of yajna to fulfill his lusty desires. He thought of the lower arani as Urvashi, the upper one as himself, and the middle one as his son. A relevant Vedic mantra quoted herein by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is Shami Gabad Agnim Manta. A similar mantra is Urvasyam Urasi Pururava. Pururava wanted to have children continuously by the womb of Urvashi. His only ambition was to have sex life with Urvashi and thereby get a son. In other words, he had so much lust in his heart that even while performing yajna, he thought of Urvashi instead of thinking of the master of yajna, Yajneshvara, Lord Vishnu. So this is Omagyana Tamrindasya Yanandanam Shlakaya Chakshuram Maratam Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovastam Stapatam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svataranthikam. So this Pururva, he's a very lusty person. And this is understandable, because Krishna says that Kama Esha, Kroda Esha, Rajaguna Smudhava, Mahashno Mahapapma, Vidye Enam Vida Vivairinam. So the Supreme Lord said, it is lust only which is later transformed by the mode of passion, and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of man. So, when the living entity takes birth in the material world, the lust had originally been love, but it was transformed into lust. Every living entity is pure by nature, and everybody is Krishna Nityadas. We're all eternal servants of Krishna, and we're all designed to love Krishna, but we decided that we didn't want to love Krishna anymore, so Krishna put us in the material world, and all our love turned into lust. And so this lust is very prominent in society, and so devotees are very fortunate because they have the knowledge to conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Krishna says, he says, Evam buddhi parambuddha singstapayatmanapana jahi shatram mahabaho kamarupena durashidam. He said, thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher self, and in this one way one should conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So lust is the enemy, and so this enemy is very, very powerful, and if one is defeated by this enemy, then one falls down. And we saw this Srila Prabhupada talks about the great sage Vishvamitra. Vishvamitra, he was meditating. He was not a devotee, he was an impersonalist. But he was meditating and he had an enemy. What was his enemy? There was a battle. Anyway, he had a rival, and his rival was afraid to be defeated by Vishvamitra. So he sent a heavenly damsel called Menaka, and Vishvamitra was meditating with his eyes closed. And simply by hearing the ankle bell of Menaka, he fell down. And of course he had sex with Menaka, and one beautiful child was produced named Shakuntala. And of course Vishvamitra, he didn't want to have anything to do with Menaka because he was falsely trying to renounce any kind of enjoyment, and he didn't even have any want to have anything to do with his daughter Shakuntala. So this is lust, that it has no morality. It simply blinds the victim. Another instance of lust is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the next chapter, I think it's the next chapter, Kinyayati, that he was also similarly very, very lusty, that he it's a quite a convoluted story, but basically there was a girl called Devayani. Devayani was the daughter of Brihaspati, and so Devayani, she went bathing one time, and she was with her friend Samista, and so they went swimming in a river, and they took their clothes off before they went swimming, and when they got out, accidentally Devayani put Samista's clothes on. Samista was the daughter of a king, and so when they got out, Devayani was upset because Samista had put her clothes on. So they got into a big argument, and Samista threw into a well, and Yayati, he came along, he was the king, and he was riding somewhere in the forest, and he saw the well, and he saw this girl Devayani in the well, so he pulled her out, and she was attracted to him because he had saved her. Even though he was from a Kshatriya family, she was from a Brahminical family, so this was Anuloma. So it wasn't a suitable match, but anyway, she was happy to be saved, so she wanted to marry him, and he was so overcome by lust for this girl that he wanted to marry her. Anyway, but she also went and told her father that this girl Shamista, what she had done, that she had they had had a big argument, and so she was still angry with Samista. So the sage Brihaspati, he said, is it Brihaspati? Huh? Shukaracharya, excuse me. Shukaracharya, he said, you can marry my daughter, but if you ever engage in any sex life with this other girl, Samishta, then I will curse you. So anyway, Yayati gave Devayani a child, and Samishta was jealous. She wanted to have a child too, so she approached him and King Yayati, and so he was a Kshatriya, so the Kshatriyas supposed to oblige a woman if a woman approaches a Kshatriya. So he knew his religious responsibilities, so, and he was also lusty. So therefore, he gave her a child. And then when Devayani found out about this, she went back to Shukaracharya, and Shukaracharya was very, very upset. So he cursed him to become old. And so this was a terrible curse, for Yayati because he was young and he wanted to enjoy his lusty youth. So when he was cursed, he said, well, please give me some kind of escape clause so I can get out of this curse. And also Shukracharya knew that his daughter was very lusty, so he didn't want to deprive her of Yayati's youth so she could not have any more sex with him. So he said, well, if you can find someone to transfer your old age to, then, you know, you can become young again. So anyway, he was very lusty. He even approached his kids. Just imagine, you want to transfer your kid, your curse to your kids. He was so lusty that he was prepared to do that. So he approached his eldest son, was Yadu. And Yadu had a very good excuse for not exchanging his youth for Yayati's old age, because he said that I have not fulfilled my desires yet. And if I give you my youth, then I will be frustrated. And then I will never be able to come renounced. So Prabhupada says in the purport, this is all about Varnashram, that if one goes through the whole divisions of Varnashram, then one actually eventually becomes renounced. That's how it's supposed to happen anyway. So he refused, and he wasn't condemned for that. And then he had two other children, he approached them, they weren't interested, they didn't have a good excuse, they were considered irreligious. Huh? Five sons, excuse me. So then he approached his youngest son, and his youngest son was named Puru, and his son Puru, he graciously offered his youth without even asking. He said that the first class disciple, he doesn't even have to wait for the guru to tell him what he wants or the father to tell him what he wants. He automatically knows what he wants. So he offered his youth, and so Yayati became young again. And he enjoyed for 1,000 years, he enjoyed. And then at the end of it, he got sick of it. And it's described actually that while he was enjoying, he was still worshipping the Lord. And that because he was a sincere devotee, eventually he overcome his lusty propensities. So this is also described in the 11th canto. There's one very important verse, Jato Shraddha Makatasu Nibbana Savakameshu Vedadukatmakan Kaman Grichajo Hiyanishvaraha. So this verse means that the devotee, having awakened faith in the narrations of his pastimes and activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense gratification, should remain happy and worship me. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense gratification, he should sincerely repent for his actions, but he should carry on engaging in devotional service. So Krishna says, even though he is sometimes engaged in sense gratification, he should remain happy and worship me. So it's not easy to give up sense gratification overnight. So this lust is very deep, and it may take some time to purify the heart of all this lust, but Krishna's trying to encourage us. But it's not that we don't have to work at it. The whole process of Krishna consciousness is one of following the regulative principles very, very seriously. That if we don't follow the regulative principles seriously, the whole program that Srila Prabhupada gave us, or being engaged very seriously in devotional service, then this change of heart won't take place. So we have to really replace lust with love for Krishna. That is really what it's all about. And there's one very nice verse, Vikriditam Vraja Viditam Vishnu. Sorry. So where would we be without Krishna? Vikritam Vajavada Budu Vada Budu. Right, so this means that one who faithfully hears about or describes the playful pastimes of Krishna with the gopis of Vrindavan will overcome, will turn this lust into love. So this is the process, but it's not that we can suddenly just jump up to hearing only about Krishna's playful pastimes with the gopis. That there is another story in this connection, slightly different, but in the story of Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya, he, as we know, he was a great acharya, and that he saw one time when they were bringing out Lord Venkateshvara. Is it Lord Venkateshvara? What was his seat of residence, Ramanujacharya? Anyway, the deity there, very beautiful deity, so they had a big procession, and they brought the deity out, and there was elephants there, and there was thousands of people following the deity, and Ramanujacharya, he noticed one man, and this man was completely besotted with one young girl, and he wasn't paying any attention whatsoever to the deity. He was fanning the girl. She was a very beautiful girl. He didn't care about the deity. He was just completely looking a fool, completely enamored by this young lady. She was very beautiful. So Ramanujacharya, after the procession was over, he said, "Bring that man to me." So this man was very strong, very good looking. His name was Dhanardhar. He was a famous wrestler. So he spoke to him, Ramanujacharya. He said, "If I can show you somebody more beautiful than this girl, will you worship that person instead of worshiping this girl?" So anyway, Ramanuj, he showed him the beautiful deity. And he showed him the eyes of the deity. And the eyes were so attractive that Dhanardhar, he agreed to worship the Lord. And then he became a great devotee of Ramanujacharya. And he was an example that Ramanujacharya used as an example of renunciation. So this is the whole concept of Krishna consciousness, is that it's more satisfying, there's more enjoyment than material life. That even the most beautiful things in the material world become pale by comparison with the nectar that one can derive from Krishna consciousness. There's another personality who was Ramanujacharya's spiritual master. His name was Jamunacharya. Jamunacharya, his life was very, very interesting, because when he was young, he was very poor. He came from a very poor family. But he was super intelligent. And his guru was his lord and master. And somebody came along and insulted his guru, and he was a fake guru, but he was very learned. So he sent one of his disciples along to challenge Jamunacharya's guru. So Jamunacharya, he said that even the lowest disciple of my guru can defeat your guru. So they had a debate. And Jamunacharya, he was very, very clever. And he defeated him in the debate. And he was given half the kingdom by the king. So he became very licentious. He became a king, which means all kinds of opulence, all kinds of women, everything else. And then he became detached. It's a very interesting story in a book about Ramanujacharya written by Naina Sharanya. You've ever read that book? It's a good, very good book. Anyway, so he became very detached, and then he quoted a verse which Srila Prabhupada, or he cited a verse, composed a verse, which Prabhupada quotes a lot. Yadavati mama cheta krishna padaravinde. This is a famous verse. He said that since I have been engaged in the service of Krishna and have experienced the ever-fresh taste of serving the Lord, when I think of sex life, then my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. So this is the sign of advancement. Prabhupada says that one's detachment from sex life, that is the real test of advancement. So we are trying to come to that platform, becoming free from these desires. And so one time, actually, when some devotees were saying to Srila Prabhupada that they were having trouble with this particular aspect of their life, Srila Prabhupada said, then you should worship the deity. So worshipping the deity is very purifying. And hearing about Krishna's pastimes, there's two different types of pastimes of Krishna. There's occasional pastimes and eternal pastimes. So occasional pastimes are the pastimes that Krishna enacts in the material world. And these pastimes, it is recommended that we hear about as much as possible. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is in 12 cantos. In the first 9 cantos, they are all about the material creation, the history of the universe, different devotees, the process of devotional service. But the 10th canto is specifically just about Krishna. And so Srila Prabhupada, being afraid that he wouldn't get a chance to translate all 12 cantos, he jumped to the 10th canto, and he actually wrote the Krishna book, which is a summary of the whole of the 10th canto. And he wanted that to be distributed to the general public, even though it contains very intimate passages about Krishna and the Gopis. But because Srila Prabhupada, he's following in the mood of that verse, that Vikriditam Braja Vadabir Idam Vishnum, that by hearing about the pastimes of the Lord, one automatically will conquer over these lusty desires, but at the same time, it's a gradual process. And it may take a long time to come to the point where we're qualified to hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. So Srila Prabhupada was very vigilant to make sure that neophyte devotees did not suddenly jump to simply hearing about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. So there was an instance in Los Angeles. There was the Gopi Bhava Club, where a group of devotees, about 40 devotees, were gathering regularly to discuss the activities of the gopis. They weren't really studying the other books very much. They were simply concentrating on this particular aspect of Krishna's pastimes. And Srila Prabhupada got very, very angry. He said, this is not for the neophyte devotees. So he stopped that, and so it became a kind of very, one had to think very carefully about whether one should read about Krishna's affairs with the gopis. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to study those books about Krishna's intimate pastimes, because he wrote a commentary to the song by Narottam Das Thakur, where Narottam is saying, when will I be very much eager to read the books of the six Goswamis? Because most of the books by the Goswamis, except for Jiva Goswami and maybe Sanatana Goswami, at least Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, who wrote the most, especially Rupa Goswami, are very much all about Krishna's pastimes. So in the beginning of the one of his most famous books, which is the there's two books, what are they called? Lalita Madhava. Lalita Madhava, in one of the first verses, he says, may the pastimes of Lord Krishna eradicate all sinful reactions and nullify all material desires. Because the pastimes of Krishna, they're like a blend, they're like shikharini, a blend of yogurt and honey, which defeats the pride of the nectar produced even on the moon. For these pastimes, they broadcast the sweet fragrance of the loving affairs of Srimati Radharani and the gopis. So these pastimes, Rupa Goswami says, may they nullify all sinful reactions, and may they eradicate all material desires. So this is Krishna consciousness is full of so much wonderful knowledge, so many pastimes, so many books, there's so much to study. And so even the most advanced devotees, okay, the manjaras, they are very intimate with Radharani. And so generally lust means that we have this very, very strong desire to enjoy ourselves. And of course sex life is the epitome of lust. But the manjaras, they have no desire to have any relationship with Krishna outside of their relationship with Radharani. There's a very interesting book by one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, Ud Bihari Lal Kapoor Adikeshava Prabhu, who wrote a book about Lord Chaitanya and his teachings. And this book's very interesting because at the end of the book, he's talking about the mood of the manjaras. And the manjaras, they are even more privileged than the sakis, even more than Lalita and Vishakha, according to this book. Prabhupada said that anything he writes should be published in BTG. So he's a bona fide source of information, I hope. But in this book, it's very interesting. So he's saying how the manjaras, they are not interested in any direct relationship with Krishna. And so they, even if Krishna approaches them and touches them, they're not interested. They tell him to go away. And he's very happy to see that because he wants to see their allegiance to Radharani. So we, as followers of Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami, who were all the great devotees? Who were they? If we go through the list of all the greatest acharyas since Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, according to Kavi Kanapur, Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. Sanatan Goswami is Rati Manjari. Gopal Bhatta is Guna Manjari. Raghunath Bhatta is Raga Manjari. Raghunath Das is Rasa Manjari. Bhugava Swami is Prema Manjari. Lokanath Swami is Leela Manjari. They're all manjaris. And we've heard that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was a manjari. We've heard that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a manjari. Prabhupada never said what he was. We can't speculate. But at least according to Kavi Kanapur, who was considered to be the greatest Vaishnava poet and a great authority, when he was enumerating the previous ontological identity of the great acharyas or the residents or the associates of Lord Chaitanya, this is what he said. So They never had any desire. Even the Sakyas, they don't want, they're simply interested in Radharani's pleasure. But sometimes they do have intimate pastimes with Krishna alone. But never the Manjaris. The Manjaris are simply completely just intimately serving Radharani's connection with Krishna. That's all. So, so this philosophy is very deep, and there are so many different aspects of this philosophy. And because this lust is a very prominent feature in the material world, and this verse is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is said to be the brilliant Purana by which we will get light in this age of Kali. So this is a very important part of this philosophy, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was Radharani. He was a mixture of Radharani and Krishna, but he was actually Radharani because he wanted to see what it was about Krishna that was so attractive. So to understand this philosophy, it's a very deep philosophy. And in the beginning, you know, we're trying to learn that we're not this body. If we're not this body, then what are we? So we don't know what we may become. But, you know, we can't become Nanda Maharaj or Mother Yashoda. We can have the same filial affection that they may feel. This is all described in a book by Shiva Ramaswamy. This is a very good book which describes the eligibility of a devotee for hearing about these very intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. That if one becomes disturbed, sexually disturbed by hearing about these pastimes, then one can say that one is not ready. But in the beginning, there's a lot of groundwork to do in Krishna consciousness, that for many, many years, we may simply be practicing our sadhana, focusing on the basic philosophy, which is always there. Even for the most advanced devotees, reading the Bhagavad Gita is still full of nectar. The Bhagavad Gita is a book that you can read again and again and again, and every time you read it, you realize a deeper level of the teachings of the Lord to Arjuna. So this philosophy is ever fresh, but there's so many different levels of this philosophy. It goes so far that we should try to understand as much as we can. That we, whatever identity we have in the spiritual world will be perfect. But then Srila Prabhupada says there's different dimensions to perfection. There's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So, you know, whatever aspirations we have, Krishna will fulfill. But the life of a devotee is very exciting because we have so much to look forward to, that at the end of this life, that if we can get free from this lust, which is the greatest enemy, then automatically we can qualify ourselves to go back to be in Krishna's eternal pastimes. So we should hear about Krishna, and we should hear about all of Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's killing of the demons. Each demon represents a different facet of impurity or anathas, all these demons. So we should try to study. This is all enumerated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his books and elsewhere. And then gradually, as we become more and more purified, we can hear more about Krishna's eternal pastimes in the spiritual world. So I'll finish there. Anyone have any questions? Comments? Yes.
Just a point. I don't think there was. I was. Days of the Gopi Bala Code, I don't think there was like 40 people in that.
Well, that's what I read today in Shivaroma, I guess you researched it.
Huh?
I mean, that's what I read today in his book.
In his book? He has that in a book?
That's what he said. Maybe he got it wrong.
Wasn't it?
Why, how many do you think it was? How many was it? I don't know. Maybe there's some hangers on. I don't know. Anything else? Any ladies? Questions? All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.